Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone for inviting us back. You know, you never know. We were here last year. You never know whether you'd be invited back or not. But it's just such an honor for Gay and I to be here. And we really appreciate the leadership team, if I can call it that, that asked us to come down for the weekend and spend some time with them. And that really helped. Now when I look out there, I can see some faces that I know because I met you the last couple of days. What's a good way to say this? I am so excited for you. I really am. The more I know about you, the more I learn about this group, the talent that's here. Before I forget, where's the brother that led singing? Thank you for, where'd he go? thank you. All right, thanks for picking those songs tonight. But really, just with the talent, the elders and Zach and all that you have here in the goals and the plans that you have, Lord willing, all these things will come together. But they can. But you all need to be on the same page and be working together and holding each other's hands, if you will, and it'll come together. I have, those of you that have heard me, I'm different, I guess, because I'm old. You don't see any slides up here. I'm old school. I've got my notes. The thing that I'm going to talk about tonight is something that I'm passionate about. And I have been ever since I was 21 years old when I obeyed the gospel. I grew up in the Baptist church. And that some of you heard some of that story yesterday. But thankfully, this cute girl sitting over here that I'm with, in September to be 56 years, I'm with her. I asked her out when I was 17. She was 15. I told this too, but I asked her to go to the county fair in Owensboro, Kentucky, and it was on a Wednesday night. And her mother said, "Well, you know, you have Bible study tonight. Why don't you?" I was Danny then. "Why don't you ask Danny to go to Bible study, and then you can go afterwards?" Well, I wanted to go out, so I did, right? That was the first time that I had been in the Lord's church. And what shocked me was, as I looked around, you know how you do that when you go into a place, you look around and see who you know, of the number of people that were there that I knew. One of my basketball coaches, an insurance adjuster, my chiropractor, a neighbor down the street, my paper boy, who is Dick Blackford, that some of you might know, that preaches in Arkansas. And they were all Christians. And it just made me start thinking, but if it wasn't for Gay, I wouldn't be standing here right now. And I love her and appreciate her for that. But some of the things that we're going to touch on are really to lead and get us thinking about when we come back in March. And I want to really encourage you to be here. Not because it's me and not because of what we're going to be doing, but just because of what your plans are. And Lord willing, we can help you with some ideas that can get everybody on the same page, excited about evangelism and excited about leading others to Christ. Some of you know that I have a podcast, and that's something that I started. That was my COVID project. And we've interviewed 66 people now. And one of the things that's been so exciting for me, probably 80% of the ones that I've interviewed, I've never met them in person. And so I've made a bunch of new friends. But the ones that I'm interviewing are men and women that are out there. And so far, we've stayed in the States. But those that are involved in what we're talking about tonight. Those that are passionate about evangelism, and I wanted to find out who they are, where they are, how they're doing their work, what kind of studies do they have, how do they set up studies, and what are they doing. And we've just been exposed to just a ton of ideas, and that's been so exciting. So if you've not ever, I don't want to sound like a commercial, but if you haven't watched that, it's leadingotherstochrist.org. And And we've just had an awful lot of people that are listening to that as well, which is so encouraging. You know, just a couple of thoughts about the power of God. Gay and I were talking about this the other day. We sing about God. We sing about God's power, and we would say we believe that. But sometimes I think, and I want to challenge us here just for a moment with this question, do we really? Do we really believe in God's power? Do we really believe in the power of the gospel? I think sometimes we think it's all on me. It's all on you if you're doing this. And so many times in talking to people, the fear factor that's out there with so many Christians that I've talked to, they're afraid they won't be able to answer the questions that somebody asks. They're afraid of whatever. And we've got to get over that. We've got to realize who our Father is and what He has promised to do and how He has promised to help us. We're not in this by ourselves. And we need to keep reminding each other of how powerful God is. God is amazing. He's eternal. Just a few things here that everybody here knows. We can't outlast Him. He's eternal. He's omniscient. We can't outthink God. He's omnipotent. All right? We can't outmuscle God. He's omnipresent. We can't outrun Him. We just can't. And sometimes we, you know, maybe point a finger at one of our friends or neighbors, and because they don't believe in God, or you hear something they say, and if we look in the mirror, like I'm saying, we might be guilty of the very same thing. Our evangelism level will go up if we really truly believe in God's power. He's the one that will cause the increase. He's the one that's going to cause it all to work. A life of service. I want to just touch on a couple of things that Zach said this morning. Excellent lesson. In fact, I want to commend the Bible. I didn't get a chance to meet Nathan. Thank you. Excellent class this morning. The song leaders, the comments that were made at the Lord's table. This everything was just. And I'm not. I really mean that. And Gay and I were talking about it. Very good. And same thing tonight. So again, you have so much talent. But it's a life of service. It's what is that supposed to look like, a life of service? And Zach touched on some of this this morning in talking about holding up the banner of God. We are in a war. And you know what? We don't think about that being a war. Look at this nice place. Got lights and running water, and we've got accommodations here. Doesn't look like we're in a war, but we are. And sometimes we look at this wrong, and we want just to focus in some places, focus on nice accommodations and everything, and what we're looking for, and what people are looking for in a church, if you will. But we need to remember that we've been saved to serve. We've been saved for a purpose and for a reason. And that's to lead others to Christ. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. That is our mission individually. That should be our mission as a congregation. Leading others to Christ. So why am I here tonight? I think one of the reasons I'm here is I'm trying to stir you up. You ever need to be stirred up? You ever need to be your energy level increased a little bit? You know, I was a basketball coach for years, and I was just part of the game, if you will, of stirring the players up for the game, stirring the fans up or whatever. But the Hebrew writer talks about it. It's one of the reasons that we come together, to stir each other up to love and good works. So if you can, as a congregation, if you can follow the leadership this year and you get stirred up and get serious about it, some amazing things will happen. They really will. There was an article, and I mentioned this to our group yesterday, that was in the Owensboro Messenger and Enquirer in 1960, when I would have been 14 years old. And the title of the article was, "The Church of Christ, Fastest Growing Church in America." Can you imagine seeing that headline today? Most of us would say, no way. So when I first saw that, I was blown away, because another ironic thing, it was in the paper 1960 on April the 30th, which is my birthday. Did y'all write down April 30th? Okay. But isn't that, it's just ironic for me. But to look at that and you go, okay, that was 1960. What has happened? And in the podcast that I'm doing, some of the things that are coming out, quite frankly, because we have conversations before and we have conversations with them after that you don't get to hear, but some of the things that are going on, quite frankly, are depressing. The number of Christians is dropping. There's about 2 conservative Church of Christ that close a month. There's a shortage of preachers. That's one of the reasons you're looking at putting a preacher training program together. The preachers that are out there, many of them are leaving. They're getting frustrated for various reasons. And it's really depressing to hear that. And we try to keep the podcast all positive, but we need to be real. And we need to understand what's going on in the real world, if you will. To keep examining of why is this going on? Have we lost our first love? Is the question. Have we lost our focus? And we need to get serious, as I said a few minutes ago, and really believe this. Now listen to me. Our eternal destination depends on how serious we take this subject of evangelism. You know, this is not just Zach's job. This is not just the elder's job. Too many places, that's the thought that's out there as well. Every one of us that have obeyed the gospel have been given the charge to teach someone else. And you say, I don't know how to do that. Well, come back in March and we'll give you some ideas and some approaches that we can help with that. I found an article a couple of weeks ago that I shared it with Gay and thought, well, this might be really good to read. This is a religious writer. But listen to this story that he's talking about. He was in special forces in Vietnam. Let me just ask real quick, how many, because I don't know you that well, how many men, women do we have in here that have served in their country? Raise your hand if you would. Everybody look around. If you would, raise your hand up. All right? Well, I want to personally say thank you for your service. And I mean that. Okay? And then I'm going to take that, though, and I'm going to talk about our service. And to think about that as a Christian, can you imagine another Christian coming up to you and saying, sister or brother, thank you for your service? And you say, well, I didn't serve in the military. I know. Thank you in the service of the Lord's kingdom. But listen to this article. On a lonely midwinter day, I and a couple hundred other soldiers took a flight across the ocean. Boarding that commercial airliner, we stowed our gear and fastened our seatbelts just as we'd done so many times before. It all seemed so routine. But the next time they opened the doors, routine vanished like a dream. The sights, the sounds, and smells that bombarded our senses were overwhelming. It was a whole new world. It was like nothing we had ever seen before. When that door swung open, heat and humidity rolled over us like a tsunami. Every pore in our bodies seeped sweat. And the smell was something else, a strange brew of jet fuel, sewage, rotting vegetables, and smoke. It exploded in our nostrils. This was Vietnam. It looked like the depiction of a war zone that you might have seen in the movies, but this was no movie. There was no marching bands, no cigar-chomping John Wayne to welcome us. No swaggering George Patton to fill us with courage, No shouts of rangers lead the way, just a single, somewhat tired GI pointing to a line of waiting buses, engines running. His message was simple, welcome to the war. And he went on and said this, whether you like it or not, we're all born behind enemy lines. Whether you know it or not, you live in a war zone. Like our commander before us, deployment is limited, but so is our mission. And therein lies the message of our life. Let's figure out the best way to accomplish our objective so we can all go home together. I just thought that was powerful, what he said there. We referred to it this morning, Zach did, in Ephesians. I want to read this very quickly here. Familiar passage, but I think it's just so powerful. In Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 10, Paul says here to the Ephesian brethren, and you remember these are the same brethren that we read about in Revelation where Christ says that they had lost their first love. So a lot of things that were written to the church at Ephesus, they didn't listen to, they didn't heed. And you remember Jesus said unless they made some changes, he was going to take their candlestick out. And maybe some of you have been there a few years ago, Gay and I got to go to Ephesus. There's no church there. It's all ruins. But listen to what he said to them. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. Yours might say to stand firm. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit. Being watchful to this end with all perseverance, supplication for all the saints. And then notice what he says, and for me, he says, that utterance may be given to me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that in it I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. That's just always moved me since I first read that years ago. What if? What if? This is something that's come up in the podcast of different ones telling their story of how they became Christians. I asked them to tell me a conversion story. And many of them have many. But it came up in the very first interview that we did. And Benjamin Lee preaches out in Texas, and he was talking about a lady that worked at a grocery store, and he was in line, and they were busy, and this was way before COVID, and the lines were all full, and he was watching her and how she was interacting with the customers and just really pleasant and really good at what she was doing. And when he got up there to her, he said, I was just motivated, and he saw her name, and he said, I just wanted to tell you what a good job you're doing. Well, he says she just lit up, and, you know, people sometimes don't hear compliments very often out there in the service world. And long story short, he ends up, and every time he would go back, he would look to see if she was working and get in her line. And so they developed a relationship. He invited her to services. She came, and it was either six or seven. She obeyed the gospel and led six or seven others to Christ. And the conversation that we had, I said, well, Benjamin, what if you had never said anything to her when you were in the line? Because haven't we all done that? We're in the line, we go through, we don't say anything. What if he hadn't started up that conversation? What if he hadn't developed that relationship with her? She probably wouldn't have come to services. She probably wouldn't have obeyed the gospel, and neither would her friends. So this, our theme at Creekside in Franklin this year is what if. So what if we really learn how to do this thing called evangelism? What if Vestavia really got serious about the plans that are on the table? What would this look like? What's going to happen with this? Okay? What if we, let's use what Paul said here, and you need to do this. Paul was asking the Christians there at Ephesus to pray for him that he would continually have the courage to speak up. Paul said that I might boldly continue to proclaim Christ. We need to pray. You need to pray for each other to boldly proclaim him here in this community. And if you do that, what's that going to look like? You know, what starts happening when you see people start obeying the gospel? We've got 8 or 9 new Christians, and I'll share some of this. I won't go in too deep, but this has all happened since I was here last time. We have a fellow that had a Pentecostal background. He obeyed the gospel, introduced his sister to, he's 51, introduced his sister to us. She's 48. She becomes a Christian. There was another fellow that he knew that's 30, Catholic background. He obeyed the gospel 2 weeks ago. One of my friends, he was in the Marines in Vietnam. He's at another congregation, and he's on fire setting up studies. Gay can tell you, he's calling me constantly saying, Danny, have you got time? I've got another study set up. Well, how about that? Can you do that? Would that be legal, Paul? Yeah. You know, think about it. There's some out here that may not be really comfortable teaching, but you might be really good at setting up studies. Okay? Maybe you're like an Andrew, and you can get people to come and see. And you may not be a Peter. You might be a Barnabas, where you can encourage everyone. But this John Fisher is his name. He introduced me to this fellow that was in Vietnam. And when we met, the three of us met for lunch. I just wanted to get to know him and talk about what the study would look like. He had lost his wife like 2 months before, 72 years old, and we sat there, and literally we sat there and as he was crying for about an hour and a half. Few comments made, but it was one of the most emotional settings I guess I've had in a while. And we ended up setting up the study. He ends up obeying the gospel. And just an amazing guy. Another fellow that John introduced me to, he said he'll be the hardest-headed Baptist that you've ever studied with. And I said, I don't know about that. I've grown up around a lot of those folks. He recently obeyed the gospel. We had a call 2 weeks ago. It wasn't a call, but it was to our website. A lady said she had moved from Alabama. I'm not sure exactly. I should have got that before I came. She was deaf, and she was texting on our website and said that she had moved to Franklin about a year ago, met a fella that was also deaf. They've been studying, and he wanted to obey the gospel, and they didn't know where to go. And could we help? Well, that's turned into him obeying the gospel. We've got a lady from another congregation that is incredible at signing, and she's come over to help. And it's just so exciting to see these things that are going on. You do this, and there'll be all kinds of stories that are going to come out of this group. Because you do the work, and God will give the increase. The energy that comes. And I love, and I haven't been here enough to know, but I don't know, over the years, I just love to see after the services are over with, where people stand around talking to each other. Do y'all do that quite a bit? Okay. That's good. But, you know, some congregations you go to, as soon as it's final amen, they're out the door, right? But to see people, but what's really exciting is to see these new Christians interacting with the older Christians. And watch and listen to them as they're developing relationships. We touched on this in our yesterday too, but that's a very hard thing for somebody to obey the gospel and come into a new group, and maybe they're shy and they need friends, but they don't know how to do that. And it's awkward. They don't know where to sit. They don't know who you are. And if you don't talk to them, you know, no conversation takes place. I didn't bring this up the other day, but y'all were in the leadership meeting talking about learning new songs, and that's always a good thing to do. But you have a new Christian that comes in here, they don't know our old songs. And they're not used to singing the way we sing. And it's just fascinating to watch people as they learn and as they grow. We did have one fella here, he is a senior in high school, that just recently obeyed the gospel. His girlfriend worships with us, and he does now too, of course. Just really, really shy and a special guy, but just has a hard time communicating and making friends with others. And so just to see that energy of the congregation, the family welcoming in these new Christians, these new Christians that have been adopted into God's family, and that's the whole thing that you have to learn how to do, is to how to welcome them and to be patient with them. They're not used to being here at services like you are. There's a lot of things, that new habits that they have to develop, and they need your help and my help to help them along. But when you see them start making those changes, it's so exciting. The 72-year-old I was just telling you about, he won the Bronze Star. He was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. But anyway, he calls it, when I first met him, I put my hand out to shake it, and he said, "Nah, I don't shake hands, I'm a hugger." So we've nicknamed him now Don the Hugger. So if he was here, I'm not kidding you, I don't know how he would do it, he would get around to every one of you to hug you. He's been a Christian for about 3 months. Just the energy that he brings, all right? He's so excited about everything that's going on. So the energy, and just to think about all the things that are so exciting. There was a congregation about 20 miles from us, and during COVID, the preacher passed away. And they only had, and this is what you've got in a lot of places, they only had 8 people. And when he passed away, they decided to close up, and they've come to worship with us, which is good for us. But there's a sister there named Imogen. She's probably 80, 85, I'm not sure. Big football fan, just a joy to be around. But she came up to me the other day, and she walked up to me literally like this and said, "Dan." And I went, "What?" She said, "I am so excited." She said, "I've never seen this many baptisms. I've never seen all of these things going on. What's going to happen next Sunday?" And I went, "I don't know, but you better come back." You know, but isn't that something? Another family is worshiping with us. They said, and I'm not sure how long he's been a Christian, but he said he's never seen in his whole Christian life this many people coming to Christ. So it's just fascinating what you hear and what can happen when people start doing what the Lord wants us to do. You know, it can be hard. You get involved many, many hours. There's a reason they call it, what do they call it? Personal work? I wonder why they call it work. Because it's hard. The time to set up the studies, the time to take the time and do that is, but the reward and the benefits from it, if you will, are just, there's no work that I could do that even can compare and to watch what happens in the lives of people. But you have to. That's why I'm really strong in the idea of working two by two. You know, Jesus sent the 70 out two by two. He sent the apostles out two by two. I love if Paul, if I was here, I would try to encourage you or somebody. We're going to work together, and we would go together. And it helps so much to be in a study with somebody. If I'm leading the study, and then whoever's with me, if I know they've got my back, if there's a question or something that we run into and I need help with it, I know I've got my buddy here to help me. Another thing, when the study's over with, you know, and this has happened so many times, you go out and get in the car and you're evaluating the study that night. Well, did you see how they reacted when we looked at that verse? Did you hear this question? And then you can evaluate and to get yourself prepared for the next study. Gay has been a tremendous help with me. She's been on so many studies with me. Two men working together. Husbands and wives working together. Are you ready, women? Two women working together. You women can set up studies with people, with other women that Paul and I or any that we couldn't set up studies with. And you have the ability to get out there and teach and lead others to Christ. And there's nothing wrong with doing that at all. There's restrictions in our worship. But there's so many women, and many of you, there's probably many of you like that here, and there's women that you know that are out there. And that's come up, we've interviewed, I think, 6 women on the podcast. And Barry Kirchville down in Tennessee, he was talking about this lady, Eunice, that said, she was one like my friend John, and she was constantly setting up studies for him. So ladies, there's so many things that you can do. So don't you think that this evangelism is just the job of the men. You can help this group so much. One thing I want to touch on real quick is I came across this not too long ago, and I'm just really excited about it. And really, this is going to be the first group that I've talked about this very much. And maybe some of you have heard it before. There's a Greek word. It's oikos, O-I-K-O-S. And it's a word that's used in the New Testament that refers to the extended family. And this whole idea of, you know, the Great Commission says go into all the world and preach the gospel. And I've been saying this for a long time. We can't go into all the world. You can't do that. I can't do that. But I can sure go into, what do you think I'm going to say? I can go into my world. You can go into your world. And this idea of this extended family, I'm going to go through some quick examples, is people that you know. It could be people you go to school with. It could be people that other family that are not Christians, co-workers, neighbors, others. I've got a list 2 or 3 pages long of people in the community. Who do you know? Who's your vet? Who's your mechanic? Who's your, you know, just a, who does your hair? Who's your barber? Who's your beautician? And just on and on with all the people that we know in the community and that we work with and that they know us. And so the whole idea is we don't have to go out here and talk to total strangers about evangelism. We've got a whole network, if you will, that we know. I have to tell this. I was doing this one time and not talking about this particular, but I was talking about people that we know. And this lady spoke up and she said, and she was the wife of one of the elders. And she said, all my friends are Christians. And she said it kind of in a proud way, but she said, I don't have any friends that are not Christians. And I said, well, your hair always looks really nice. Do you fix that yourself? No. I said, so who does it? And she named this lady that does her hair. And I said, well, what's her name? She named her. And I said, is she a Christian? No. You see what I was... You know, there's people out here that we know, and we've got to We've got to open up our eyes. I'm glad I thought of that. I found out here, my mother died about a year and a half ago, 92. And I found out that before, obviously, but she had macular degeneration. Anybody know what that is? Okay. And that's something you inherit, and I've got it. Thanks, Mom. And I went to the optometrist and had some surgery, and I'm going to have to be careful. I could lose my sight as I get older. And so, is there an optometrist here? Do we have one? No? I was going to try to set up an appointment. No. So here's what I think I'm going to start using. And this first time I've used this too. I'm going to become one. But I'm going to be a spiritual optometrist. What does that mean? I'm going to help others see how every believer has the opportunity to do God's work. I want to help everyone see that each one of us can do what God wants us to do. And to learn how to do it effectively in our circle of relationships. And I've learned this. God has put these people in our lives. And let me do this real quick. Just think about some of these passages. I'm not going to turn to them. We don't have time. Is it already 5:55? I can go to what? 7? What'd y'all tell me? No. All right. I'll just do a couple of these. In Mark 5, verse 19, that's the story there of you remember the man that was demon-possessed and Legion was his name, and Jesus cast out all the demons. You get down to verse 19, verse 18, and you see that this man, and you can imagine, because they described him earlier in the account as this guy naked running around in the tombs in the cemetery, and they would try to put chains on him to hold him down, and he would tear the chains off. And Jesus heals him, and you see the picture of him dressed and cleaned up and sitting there talking to Jesus, and everybody's like, what has happened to him? And then Jesus gets in the boat to go across the sea there, and this man comes up to him. I'll just put this in my word. He comes up to him, and he's begging Jesus to let him go with him. You remember the account? And Jesus says no. But he says, go home to your friends, to your own people. Oikos. You go home to your own people and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion for you. Isn't that something? And it says he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. Watch this. Can you do that? Now, you haven't had demons cast out of you like this story here. But can you tell people what Jesus has done for you? Have you thought about that lately? What has he done for you? And does that excite you? I mean, we would take the Lord's Supper every Sunday to remember it, but do we really remember it? Do we remember all the things that Jesus has done? What if we were all out here proclaiming what Jesus has done for us? Peter talks about the fact that we're all a priesthood, that we're all special people. Did you know you're special? Don? Are you special? Ken? Other people have called me Don this week. No. Where is he? Jerry, where is he? Oh, yeah, okay. All right. But I tease on that. But sometimes we need to remember that the God tells us that we're special. I've studied with people before talking about how much God loves us. And have even, and I'm talking about adults. And I said, you know, he loves us like our father loved us. And they start crying because they said they didn't have a dad. Or they had one, but he didn't love them. Or they had one, but my dad never said, I love you. Dads, do you tell your kids you love them? Do they know that you love them? Or our Father loves us and to a level that we don't understand. But once we start to get it, once we start understanding that, then we're going to want to go out here and share this with everyone that we can. Zacchaeus. You remember the story about Zacchaeus, the kid's song and all that? But Jesus, he goes to his house and he talks about that. Jesus says to Zacchaeus that salvation has come to your house. This is that same Greek word again. And then he went there in verse 10 of Luke 19, and Jesus said that he had come to seek and save the lost. Another one real quick is in John 4, where Christ healed the nobleman's son. And after he saw what this nobleman saw what Jesus had done, there in John 4 and verse 53, it said his whole household believed in Jesus. That network, that family. And as I said earlier, that network, maybe I didn't say this, I can't remember, that it's 8 to 15 people. 8 to 15 people. And another one is that when Jesus called Levi, Matthew, to be his disciple in Mark 2:15, it said there, now it happened as he was dining at Levi's house, that's oikos again, that many tax collectors and sinners also sat together with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many, and then it says, and they followed him. Levi, when he knew Jesus was coming, he invited his family and friends over. Acts 10, story of Cornelius, first Gentile. You know the story, right? And when the angel has the conversation with Cornelius and tells him to send for Peter, and the miracle that had to be done to convince Peter as a Jew, a former Jew, to go and talk to this Gentile, took him a while to buy into that idea. But it talks about the fact that the angel said to Cornelius in Acts 11:14, Peter will tell you words by which you and your household will be saved. There's the same word again. And Cornelius, you go and look, he had invited all of his friends and his servants to come and hear what this man of God had to say. I could go on and on looking at all the different examples. I want to encourage you to make a list. I want you to make a list. Obviously not right now. I want you to go home and make a list of people that you know that are not Christians. They know you, you know them. Again, think about your network of friends and people you work with or whatever. Make a list. And I want you to start praying for them. And when there's opportunities to invite them here, then you've been praying about that and encouraging them to come. We'll talk more about this next month. But I went through and did some. I hope my math might not be very good. I'm going to go over just a little bit. I hope that's okay. I looked at the pamphlet that we had, Paul, that had all of the groups that you have. You have four groups, A, B, C, and D, or 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm not sure. And if I did this right, I went through and counted the families that are in each group. And if I did this right, there's like 135 families represented here. And y'all can double check my math. But if you did this thing as a family, 135 families, and you sat down as a family and came up with a list of 15 people, you know how many that would be? 2,025 people. 2,025 people that you and your wife and husband and kids know, that you could start praying for and talking about finding ways to lead them to Christ. Then I went through, and maybe what you've got on the list, if I did this right, all the names, all the ones that are Christians are listed on there. And if I did that right, that's 264 Christians. If each one of you did that, that's 3,960. If each individual would come up with 15 names, it's almost 4,000 people that as a group you could be working on and trying to come up with ways to approach and set up study. 4,000 people. You don't have to go knocking on doors. You don't have to go out and set up studies with people that are total strangers. You've got a whole network already. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say? 4,000. You think God will help you? You think God will help you with that as you start praying for them and trying to come up with ways to study with them? Well, you know He will. We'll talk more about that next month too. We have a couple of sayings at Creekside I thought you might find interesting. One is, you know what the best day of the week is? Some of you might have heard this. What's the best day of the week? Sunday. Just think, is that? So we started saying that. And we've got one of the new Christians, he just loves that. He said the other day, we meet on Tuesday night. He said the second best day of the week is Tuesday. Think about that. Best day of the week is when we can come together here, see each other's face, hug each other, shake hands, encourage each other. Okay? And another saying that we have is that we celebrate the sowing. Do we celebrate when one repents? Of course we do. Do we celebrate when one obeys the gospel? Of course we do. But we celebrate the sowing. We celebrate, like this list, if my numbers are right, we celebrate the fact that we've got 4,000 people that we could talk to. And we celebrate the fact how many studies we've got going on in the congregation at the current time. It's just a different way to look at it. To celebrate the sowing. God will give the increase. I'm going to have to stop. I really want to encourage you next month to come. And what we're going to do, especially on Saturday, I'm going to take you through this study that I do, put it together 30-some years ago, been tweaking it all through. It's a simple study, a simple approach, an open Bible, let the gospel work, and we will show you how to do that. And like I said, I didn't say it here, but this is just one example. There are other studies out there, other ways that you can study with people. One thing real quick, I do want to mention, out of this podcast has come an idea of an app. And I don't know if you're familiar with, how many of you are familiar with Appian Media? Let me see your hand if you are. All right. Stuart Peck is one of the co-founders of Appian Media. About a month ago, took 2 days and filmed me doing this study. It was sitting in the kitchen of some Christians there in Indianapolis, and with the lights and the camera and all that. And the idea with that is that, think about this, with an app, you would be able to invite one of your 15 people. If you weren't able to get with them in person, you could ask them to give you permission to send this study to you because you think it's really good and you'd like to see what they think of it. And you could do that with an app. And the app's going to track, the numbers, if you will, on how many people you ask, how many people accepted it. There's 3 lessons in the study, and it will track, it'll show you that they finished lesson number 1. And it's just a real exciting thing, especially for the old guy here with all the technology that's out there. But that could be another tool, Lord willing, when I come back in March, we're going to have some of that we can show you. It's going to be on your iPhone. You can take it and cast it on your TV. It's just amazing. Matt Malden is a deacon of the church at Traders Point. And Zach, they know Matt. And he's got a marketing company. He has an app team in India. So we've got some people in India that are helping us put this together. And it's going to be able to have other languages. There's just a lot of things. So what you will see when you come, and did they tell you by you being here tonight, you're committing to be here that next Saturday? You're automatically signed up. I want to encourage you to be here because you will be able to go through this study and understand it. And then looking at it on the app, it's going to make so much more sense to you. And it'll be really clear. So thank you and I appreciate you letting me go over here for a couple minutes. But I really we're learning to love you guys. And some of you we've known for a long time. And see, Paul and Debbie, they were 17 or 18 years old when we first met them. That's how old I am, I guess. But we're just delighted that you've asked us to come. If you have any questions for me afterwards, please ask. And we're really looking forward, and Lord willing, we'll be able to be back next month. If we can help you, won't you come while we stand and sing?